this testimony. Now, I don't know about you. At home, I have got a lot of books. I would like to say I have read most of them. Some of them I have. I have bought some cookbooks to help me not cook pesto and pasta every day. It has worked a little bit. I have lots of books in my classroom, so I'm a teacher. I teach 7 and 8 year olds, so we read a lot of books together at school as well. But also, there's someone in my family who is writing a book, like a recount at the moment, and I'm going to pop them up on the screen. So it's not me, but that is me. This is my grandma, and her name is Gerda, and she is just wonderful. I had a chat with her on the phone this morning, and she just brings me so much joy whenever I speak to her. We call her Granzo. That's her nickname that we have. So this is Granzo. She has 5 children, 16 grandchildren, and she has 3 great-grandchildren. She is encouraging more to come. So, yeah. So that is our family, what our family looks like at the moment. And Granzo was born in Germany. She was one of 4 siblings, and she moved over to the UK during the war with her mum and her siblings, and later on her dad came. And then in her teenage years, they got on a ferry and they moved over to the Falkland Islands. And they lived there for, I don't know how long, for maybe like 5-10 years. But speaking to her, every time I go home, she shares these amazing stories about her life, whether it was life in Germany, whether it was the trip going over to England, life in England, life in the Falkland Islands. Hearing about the trip on the ship to the Falkland Islands made me never want to go on a ferry again after she shared that. But thankfully, from Holland to Harwich, it's a short journey, so I think I'm okay. really, really interesting stories. But she's started writing them down now in a memoir, is what we would say in the UK. So she's writing down her life story. And it's really great for us as grandchildren, because it's lovely for us to hear about her life. But also, it's something that I would like to, if I ever have children, I would like to share how great she is. And I've got lots of funny stories that I can share about her. She is a hoot and a half. But there are so many things in her life that happened before I was born that I would love to tell my children. I would love to share with friends. I would love to carry on. And so that's why she's writing this memoir. And John, going back to John wrote the book that he did for a specific reason. And we see that he wrote the book so that we would believe that Jesus is the Son of God. That is the reason why he wrote. He was writing down what was happening in Jesus' life. He wanted us, even though we may not be with Jesus whilst he was there, he wanted us reading it in the future to know that Jesus was God in human form, that he was free from doing any wrong, that he was blameless, that he was perfect, and that we would see God's character through Jesus. And we see this through multiple signs in the books. But yeah, that's why he's writing this. So we're going to go a bit deeper into one of the stories today. So I'm going to go on to the next one. And that is, why does he think that we need to know and hear about this? Well, if we go to the beginning of the Bible, we go to Genesis, we see that God creates life that is good and that is full. He creates land, he creates sea, he creates day, he creates night. And then we see in Genesis 1 that he creates humans, and that he says that they're made in his image. Now, if you were to look at my parents, you would say that I am made in their image. My mum, much to her delight, has been called my sister before, but there is a clear 21-year age difference, so she may be happy about that. I am not, but we resemble each other quite a lot. If you look at my dad, Maybe facially we don't, but we have got the same disproportionate palm to finger ratio, large palms, short fingers. We can also eat for Sweden and England. So I am in the likeness of my father as well. And in Genesis, we see that we are made in the image of God. We are reflection. We are there to be reflections of his character. And God gives Adam and Eve a wonderful place. I kind of was looking on the internet and I was like, what do I think it would have looked like? And this is kind of what I was imagining, where they were. He gave them lots of trees, animals to enjoy. He gives them lots of fruit, kind of imagining like mango trees, pear trees, a nice greengage tree, some blackberry bushes, lots of delicious things to eat. But he does, as a good parent does, says, eat from all of these trees. This one here, don't eat from it, because this tree is a tree of good and evil, and if you eat of it, you shall shortly die. So he gives us the choice. He gives us free will. He gave Adam and Eve free will to go in the garden and to walk around. Now, the question is, would they trust God, or would they define what was good and evil for themselves? Would they try and take God's place? So this is when a serpent enters the story, and the snake is kind of like a creature made in the rebellion of God. And the snake tells a different story of the tree. When Eve comes over, he says, oh, it won't bring death but life, and it will make you kind of like God. You can kind of be in that place. And instead of trusting God and saying no, she takes the fruit for herself. And as we see Eve and Adam taking the fruit, the intimacy between God and humans is lost. They kind of hide in shame, whereas before they were happy to go around the garden. They're kind of hiding from each other, hiding from God. And the consequence is that then there would be pain and there would be grief due to the choices that they had made. And he says very clearly, you came from dust, but dust you will return. There will be death. That is going to be a reality for you. Now, I realize this seems really depressing and quite sad, but do not worry. There is more to this story. He says to Adam and Eve, yes, you will return to dust, that death will now be a reality, that you will be separated from me. But to the snake, he says that you will be defeated. So that's not the end of the story. He's saying to the snake, you've taken my people away from me, but I am going to defeat you. And that's what we're going to be looking at today in the I Am the Resurrection and the Life. So we're going to go to the next slide. Oh yeah, this was like us being separated from God. So that's us with sin and death as we've like made that decision to be away from God, and then God's on the other side. And this image will come back and it will look a lot better later. So if we go on to the next slide, the verse that we're going to be looking at today is John 11, 25 to 26. It says, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will die, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Now, I went back to basics. As a teacher, we often use the dictionary to look for different meanings. I did not have the kids' dictionary, but I used Google and their dictionary definitions. So resurrection and life, those are the two main words that we're looking at today. Resurrection means to restore someone who is dead to life. So that's what resurrection means. And then life is defined as the experience of being alive, and that there is an ability to grow and to change. That we're born, and yes, we're born as a baby, but we don't stay as a baby and kind of lie there for 75 years of our life. We grow, we change, we adapt. And so that is something that we are going to also be looking at today. So as we read this, I would like to encourage you at the moment, where you are, who do you believe Jesus is? At the moment, coming here today, we know that our year system, it's 2024, that's 2024 years after Jesus' birth. You know, we know that our calendar is based around him. We know that the most popular book on earth is written about him. It leads to him, and then it's about his life. But do you think he's an important person? Like, he obviously was important, if that's the case. Maybe you feel like he's a good moral teacher. He kind of helps us know what is wrong, what is right, how to live a good life. Or do you believe that he is the Son of God, as it says he is? So, as we go into John 11, I'm just going to paraphrase the first part, because otherwise I would be reading for the next 10 minutes. So I'm just going to shorten it. There's a guy, his name is Lazarus, and he is not well. He is quite sick. And the family that he's part of is him and his two sisters, Mary and Martha, and they know Jesus quite well. So that's them. As he's sick, the sisters send a message to Jesus. Jesus hears the message, but he stays where he is for a few more days. Meanwhile, Mary and Martha, Lazarus is obviously like, oh, I'm sick. Mary and Martha are probably kind of like looking out of the window, kind of like, where is Jesus? We've told him that Lazarus is sick, wondering where he is. Meanwhile, Jesus, I can't play different people. Jesus is doing his thing, and he's like, okay, we're going to go and see Lazarus and Mary and Martha. His friends are like, are you crazy? They want to stone you. They want to kill you over there. But he's like, no, I'm not crazy. We're going to go, and we're going to go in the day. So they go, and I love at the end, Thomas, one of his followers, says, let us also go that we may die with him. And it's just like a little cheeky comment at the end. And I'm like, I would definitely be Thomas in that situation. So off they go. I'm going to read from the rest of the story and not paraphrase it all, because otherwise we're not going to get very far. So feel free to read along in your own Bible. We've got it on the screen. You can read it on your phone, whatever you feel most comfortable with. So we're reading from verses 17 to 44. So on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him. But Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. Now when Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. The tomb is the place where Lazarus's body is. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and his feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." So having heard the paraphrase and the passage from the Bible, we see a family who is close to Jesus. We see that their brother is ill and dying, and that Jesus comes to visit them, sees them, and he brings Lazarus back to life. Now, before reading, I separated one particular verse, which was, "I am the resurrection and the life," and we looked at the different meanings of both of those. And for the next 5-10 minutes, I'm just going to go through what does death, resurrection, and life look like for Lazarus? What does that look like for Jesus? And what does it look like for us? Okay, so I'm going to start with Lazarus. So we know that he died due to illness, and I'm sure lots of us in this room know people in our families or friends who have been very sick and sadly passed away. We can imagine that Lazarus was probably in a lot of pain, that Mary and Martha were spending a lot of time with him before he died, kind of saying their final goodbyes, spending that time together, maybe reminiscing on their life together. So we see that he dies, his body isn't in a good way, his life has ended. We see that he is, you know, they probably do like the tapping test, is he really dead, which I really hope when I die someone actually does that as well, like making sure he's really dead. They're like, yep, he's dead. They wrap him up and they put him in the tomb. And when he's put in the tomb, it says about the stone. When he's resurrected, they take the stone away, but obviously they have to put a stone there, and that stone is like, yep, it's rolled over, he's dead, he's in there, that's it. So he's there. We see that here the resurrection is, for him, is when Jesus comes and calls to him, "Lazarus, get up." And Lazarus is brought back to life through Jesus, which I think is amazing, because I'm like, how does someone go from dead to being alive? That is incredible. So I think it's an amazing story of how we see God's power, God's goodness in someone's life. He is brought back to life. Now, I don't know about you, if I had said my final goodbyes to my family, definitely would have eaten a Max as like one of my final meals just to experience some of Earth's goodness before I go. I don't know why I said that, but shout out to Max. I know that I would have said my goodbyes, and if I was then awakened, having died, I'd kind of be like, okay, like quite surprised, quite shocked, but also I now kind of get a second chance at life. I can go and eat Max again, but I can actually live life, I can spend time, more time with Jesus. Lazarus would be like, wow, I wasn't expecting this. I can spend more time with my families. I can spend, you know, he would hear the story that Jesus brought him back to life. He'd be like, great, I'm going to spend more time knowing who Jesus is, follow him a little bit on his travels as he goes. But for Lazarus, ultimately, he does die again. When he gets old, he dies. And that is Lazarus with the death, resurrection, and life. So he dies, he's resurrected by Jesus, he has a second chance at life again, probably lives following Jesus and doing what Jesus has said. And then he eventually dies again. For Jesus, he's alive at this point in the story. So it's kind of like, okay, well, his resurrection, how does that happen if he's alive? Well, that means that death needs to occur. So at the beginning, we know that humans were separated from God due to their sins. And we see throughout the Bible that there are sacrifices given to atone for our sins, to cover our sins. And that was often through animals that were blameless. They had done nothing wrong, but they were given as a sacrifice to God. And they would be seen as covering the sins of the one who was sacrificing them. So Jesus goes to the cross, and he goes to the cross blameless. He hasn't done anything wrong, but he goes as a sacrifice for our sin. So he's saying, actually, I'm going to be the final sacrifice. I'm going to be here with people. You know, I think, Nina, when you were saying earlier about the people on either side of Jesus as he's hanging there on the cross, you can kind of understand why those guys would be there. But Jesus is there, blameless. He hasn't done anything. But he's dying. He's that sacrifice for us on the cross. And really, it should be us who's there as we've turned away from God. But Jesus is there, and he is the ultimate blameless sacrifice. And he dies so that the sin and the shame that we feel holds on to us is no longer there, and that we can be in relationship with God. But just as we said earlier, there was the serpent at the tree in the garden, and God says there will be victory in this. You won't have victory. Actually, it's going to be mine. So, haha. So, we see 3 days later, after Jesus dies on the cross, nails in his hands and his feet, and he's taken off the cross, he's put in the tomb. You know, I kind of imagine what it would have been like in those few days after Jesus' death, kind of being like, what have we done? Jesus has died. You know, he's perfect. He's blameless. He's dead. He's died for us. We see his friends go over to his tomb, and that heavy stone which has been rolled over to be like, he is dead, it is done, is rolled away, and he's not there. The tomb is empty, which is amazing. And we see the friends see Jesus, and he's not bound up. He's there. He's like, hi, guys. And yeah, he's there. He's risen. Death couldn't hold him. He was alive again. And I think that is just such a picture of how powerful and how amazing and how victorious Jesus is, how victorious God is. And not only do we see Jesus then having life on earth a bit longer, unlike Lazarus, he doesn't die again. He lives eternally. He ascends to heaven, and we are can now be in relationship with him. 19,000 roughly. Okay, this is too much math for me. I am head of math at school, but apparently not working well today. Push that aside. So many years ago that happened, and we can still be in relationship with him today. And so then we see what that has meant for Jesus. So what does it mean for us? Well, we see at the beginning of the Bible that we were created to be in relationship with God, to enjoy earth, and that we were separated from that. And sometimes we can feel a bit like Lazarus, like we're bound up in those strips of linen. And maybe that's from things that we've done in our life that we're ashamed of. We kind of want to cover ourselves. Shame of things that have happened in our past that are holding on to us. Maybe you feel bound up in linen cloth in that you're trying to find fulfillment, like you're trying to take those off and find fulfillment in things in this world, but actually they don't really fulfill you. They might fulfill you for a little time, and then you're kind of like, oh no, that's not the satisfaction and the hope and release that I was hoping for. And I think in the world that we live in, with like Instagram and adverts on the trams and TV, there's so much where we can see people being like, if you do this health routine, your life will be fantastic. Or if you eat our amazing chicken nuggets, you're going to be satisfied in your stomach forever. Or, you know, or if you buy this laptop, all your problems will go, it will work seamlessly. And actually, so many things in our life that we go to might give us short-term satisfaction, but they don't give us that satisfaction, that kind of thing that we're really looking for. And I saw a quote by C.S. Lewis. If you don't know him, he wrote The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, The Chronicles of Narnia stories, but he also wrote a series of other books. I'd really encourage you to read them. He said, if we find ourselves with a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation, we're in relationship with Jesus. And so trying to find that in something else of this world, you're not going to find that satisfaction, because we as humans are longing for. And for us, death is a very real thing. That is something that we all could end tomorrow, could end in 50 years. We know that death is imminent. We know that it's something that we will face. There is a resurrection for us as well. We can die to our old life, not literally, but like for things in this world to satisfy us. We can turn away from that. We don't need to be wrapped in guilt and shame, but of God, and we can find completeness in him. We don't need to be bound up by those grave clothes, but we can make a choice to believe that we are to be in Lazarus. We see them being in relationship with God. And I think you might think, oh, but I'm not good enough to be in a relationship with God. I think the Bible is so clear. The woman at the well, we see him engaging with the tax collectors, you know, people that society would kind of like push away and hide away from. It comes to us actually just as we are, no matter what we've done, for all of us. And I think that's such an amazing thing to be reminded of, and live our lives in response to the love and sacrifice that he gives. As we turn away from our old life and we say, no, I believe that Jesus has died for my sin, can be in relationship with him. Okay, this, I'm pointing the wrong way compared to the picture. I can die to my old self. I can believe in Jesus. And now only can we live life to its fullest. We can turn to God when in any situation. But also we can have life and everything go well. But it means that Jesus is alongside with us for the journey, that we can turn to Jesus, that we can kind of come to him and say, made, and he can be with us for the rest of our lives. And not only that, he then gives us eternal life, that death is not the last thing. We can be in relationship with him. I made this decision when I was 10, 11. I had heart surgery when I was 10 or 11, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to slit you open. We're going to cut this and do this. And I was like, wonderful. Thank you very much. And then at the end, he was like, and, you know, we just have to, everything will be fine. And I was like, great, wonderful. I'll see you tomorrow. And that night, I was like, oh, what does that mean? You know, what do I really believe? Tomorrow, I could die in my own life. I might not come out of this, that this might be my last sleep. It wasn't my last sleep, because I didn't sleep at all. A reality of, I had to think, okay, what do I believe? Do I believe in who Jesus says he is and what I've learned at Kids Club growing up? Do I believe that? Do I believe that there is more to life and that there's more after life? I made that choice to believe that he was the Son of God. And since then, you know, I kind of had that Lazarus moment of waking up and being like, oh, the operation. I said to my parents, can you please buy me a Toblerone? That's what I want to eat when I finish surgery. And apparently my first words were when I got up from them, which goes back to made in the image of my father, because we both have a love for Toblerones and chocolate. But since then, and that I am going to try and live my life in a way that is pleasing to him, in a way that he says is good for me and is in to give me satisfaction. But I always go back to Jesus, and he fills me with peace, with love, that he is the same that he was when I got up from surgery. He was the same as it was 4 years ago when COVID was happening and everyone was, he is constant. He is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And as we believe, do you believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life? What do you teacher? Do you feel like he's a really interesting person, or do you believe that he is the Son of God? So I'm going to invite the band to come up. I'm just going to want you to, where do you see yourself? Do you feel like you're Lazarus once he's died and he's in the tomb and that there's no way of getting out? That you're kind of like bound by these grave clothes? Is that where you feel you are? Do you feel like God is taught to stand up and make a choice and move? Make a choice, make a commitment, stand up and move forward. Do you feel like your faith, you say, yes, I do believe that you are the Son of God. Life is hard sometimes. We've been waiting for you for a few days and you haven't come, feeling like Mary and Martha at the moment. Or maybe you feel like one of the disciples and you're like, yes, okay, Jesus is good. And what he has to offer is amazing, and I want to share that with everyone else. Maybe you feel like you're there. He's not moving, no matter where you're, whether you're inside the tomb, you're outside of the tomb, you're moving out of the tomb, wherever you are. Jesus, no matter where you are in life this morning, he is here for you. So I'm going to invite you all to stand up. It is more for if you feel like you're Lazarus and that God is calling you and you want to make that step forward. But maybe this is the Son of God, but I just want to recommit my life to him. Maybe that's where you're at as well. So I'm going to pray. Feel free to pray along with me. Lord, I believe that Jesus was born free of sin and that he died on the cross as a payment for my own sin. Rose again 3 days later. I believe in your gift of salvation and eternal life because of Jesus' sacrifice. And I ask for a new life through Jesus. One where I can be in relationship with him. Lord, I thank you and for making me brand new. In your name, amen. If you have that you came with, or feel free to come and speak to myself or to Nina after the service. If it's something that you've, where you feel like you're praying that for a second time, yeah. Jesus is good. And Jesus is here to meet with us. He wants to be in relationship with you.